This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and joining me remotely this morning from the depths of Petaling Jaya is the one and only Roshan Gunnison. It is now just gone past 6 a.m. in the morning. It's Tuesday, the 8th of December. And I think, you know what? It's just like less than a month to go to the Christmas season. And I think all of us have like wondering, you know, how are we going to celebrate this in the new normal? And I think we've got a story about that, and also asking whether holiday season actually starts earlier and earlier, or is that just an excuse for retailers, aren't we, Roshan?
Oh, for sure. Is it an excuse for retailers, or do you actually feel the Christmas spirit? That's always a good question, right? But I mean, Shaoning, it's a really good question to ask, right? For any festive season, when does it start for you? And I think this is a great thing to hear from the audience as well. But a little later on, we're also going to be talking about not festive seasons, but a different kind of season, the post-Trump era season. How could that feel like? Because he's a little quieter nowadays, but still has his outbursts here and there, but it's no longer mainstream. So let's dive into that in a little bit. But of course, after that, we take a look at about 6:30, we take a look at the global headlines. We're going to take a look at Japan and their stimulus package, as well as the World Economic Forum's move to Singapore over coronavirus concerns. I think that's quite a big move, actually. And of course, we'll take a look at the US and Joe Biden's healthcare team to tackle the coronavirus.
Help is on the way, but a different team. Because there was an economic team, right?
Yes. So you've got the Avengers, and then you've got Guardians of the Galaxy. You've got all these different teams being assembled, all under the same franchise, Brand America. But you've got different teams
That, Brand America. But what else is interesting today on the show is, of course, we're going to have Zakia Jaffa, who's the Deputy Secretary of Policy at the Ministry of Finance. And we're going to really ask her about, you know, what do they think about the recent Fitch downgrade of Malaysia from A- to B+, BBB+. So do tune in for that. That's going to be happening at 7:45 in the morning. I think that's going to be an interesting call, because the day before yesterday, we had Fitch's version of what happened. As always, let us know what you think. Get in touch with us via WhatsApp. Tell us about your Christmas holidays, you know, what are your plans at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few minutes. But first, some messages. This is The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Horse with No Name by America, which I always wonder who comes up with all these name titles, rather weird ones out there. But anyway, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning, and I'm joined by Roshan Gunnison today. Now, first up, we've got this interesting article from Mr. Porter, which, of course, is a website dedicated to shopping. I mean, it original...
Nice things.
Yeah, nice things. Not just...
Very nice things.
Expensive nice things. Now, Mr. Porter is the male version of Net-a-Porter, which I think if you look back in the life of e-commerce, was one of the first that focused on luxury items. You know, definitely not the man of the street kind of products, slightly above that. But they have this interesting article. Of course, they want to encourage you to shop, if you ask me. I think their agenda is very clear. But the article does ask, when should the holiday season start? And I think they interview two people, which is Dan Davis, editorial director, and also Danai Dana, who is the junior sub-editor. And they get their perspectives on when do you think you should start celebrating whatever holiday you actually celebrate. For me, of course, it's Christmas. To me, it's a big event of the year, time for family, time for friends. And unfortunately, in the pre-COVID era, my family used to have these ginormous dinners with more than 30 or 40 people. But of course, I think this year we're not doing that for sure. We're going to have just a small family do. But Roshan, when do you think people should start celebrating their festivals?
Well, when it comes to Christmas, I have a very, let's just say, a very apparent line. I think I would graciously hope that people only start celebrating and decorating for Christmas after Diwali is passed. You know, just saying that out there, just putting that there. Because, you know, in the past, we've had some of the big malls kind of ignore the fact that Diwali was happening. But hey, who's holding a grudge? Not me. But you know what? December is, to me, honestly speaking, December is Christmas month, right? You're going towards the end of the year. You've got nice decorations going around. And most importantly, you've got Mariah Carey playing in on the sound waves, on the airwaves. Yes. That is the Christmas song.
You know it's Christmas when she has arrived.
Exactly. When you hear that song, you know it's Christmas time. But, you know, when I think it comes to the Malaysians, right, we're always looking to the next festival. Because if you average it out, we've got a festival every quarter. We've got one big one coming. After Christmas, people be looking to, well, New Year's is kind of there, but Chinese New Year, right? And then Hari Raya is in the middle of the year. And then you've got Deepavali after that. So each, I think it really is very interesting to study how each family, or ask how each family themselves, when is the cue for them to start thinking about. So for Deepavali, for me in particular, one of the cues for when it's Deepavali festive period is when I exit my room and I can smell this Punjabi snack called Sirka Pare being made. And I know it's Deepavali, right? Because it's a connection towards that holiday, towards that festive period, even if it's not a holiday that day itself. But all the festivals, I think, in Malaysia, I do look forward to, because my wider extended family does celebrate each of it. And I mean, friends, food, colors, that's what's not to love about all these different festivals in each quarter of the year.
For me, you brought up one very important thing, which is the food, okay? The food is really what Malaysian festivals are primarily about, or at least an excuse for us to indulge. So every festival, of course, it's all about, you know, buying snacks, eating those snacks, and of course, getting snacks from our fellow friends. You know, there's this, I call it the eternal gift exchange program, which is fantastic. So like,
you have a name for it. Yeah, that's amazing.
So for me, I think I've already started to make my fruitcake, and I've started to make my shortbread. We have to start early. And, you know, packing these little gifts, they're not expensive, but they come from the heart and they mean a lot. And I think in this COVID-19 era, really, when you think about it, maybe we did go a little bit too commercial. We did spend too much money. Rather than spending money, maybe we should look internally and try and give small little gifts that mean a lot. And maybe instead of the big amount of money you would have spent on gifts, perhaps, you know, some charitable organization for a change. Because really, COVID-19 does bring home the point that there are many people who aren't as privileged, who are facing tough times, who have lost their jobs, or who have had pay cuts. And, you know, it's also sad when you think about the fact that for many people, they are also separated, right? So you could have one family, you know, in Singapore. I've got friends who are stuck in Singapore and haven't been able to see their parents in KL. And this has been going on for months. So traditionally, a time where you get to spend together, it has changed. Of course, Zoom is there, Microsoft Teams is there. But that physical distance, that separation, I think for me, is a little bit sad this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can't deny that, right? But for those who do have some cheer, just it's something to be a bit grateful for. I think this year, for those who have, I mean, there are different degrees of impact, right? Not to say that everyone's been impacted the same way, but not to say that people haven't been impacted as well. There are always different degrees of gratitude that we can have towards where we are, right? I mean, yes, you could be isolated, but if you still got your job and you're still in good health, that's something to be grateful for. I'm not diminishing what anyone is going through, but sometimes when things look really bleak, I personally find it a very good practice to just try and find at least one thing to be grateful for, because it does at least personally help me alleviate the stress or the mood that I'm in that present moment. But, you know, I'm always open to suggestions. That's why we have the WhatsApp line, right? 018-789-8899. Let us know what you think. If you have any advice, or if you think I'm talking rubbish, I'm more than happy to hear what you have to say about this.
Well, yeah, let us know what you're grateful for, how you intend to spend Christmas. Are you going to do things very different this year? Like what Roshan said, tweet us at BFM Radio. That's our handle. Or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Up next, we'll have some messages. This is The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was I Was a Fool by Sunflower Beam, which I have been many, many times. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Roshan Kunnison. It has just gone past 6:18 in the morning, Tuesday, the 8th of December. And up next, we've got this interesting article from The Atlantic. And it's about the one and only Mr. President, or soon to be Mr. Ex-President Donald Trump. And the title is Trump is Rapidly Becoming Irrelevant. And it's written by David Graham, who's a staff writer at The Atlantic, because Trump, apparently, according to him, has been doing two things. One, playing golf. Two, claiming victory in the elections. Now, I think, yeah, he probably has a lot of golf to catch up on because he was supposedly very busy over the last 4 years. You know, busy being a president. I'm not sure what else. But I suppose, you know, what else is he expected to do? He doesn't probably have to do his own packing, does he, when he leaves the White House on January 20th? He probably has minions to do it for him. He's not like us, you know, like counting the boxes or begging friends and family for boxes and then spending days and days wrapping stuff in newspaper. I don't think he's doing that. What he has been doing, however, is been raising funds for this so-called fight for his claim of victory in elections. And guess what? You know, he has raised more than $200 million. No joke. But if you read the fine print in terms of what yeah, he's raising exactly. it for, I think it's all about the 2024 presidential elections, right? So I don't think he's going to be irrelevant. He's going to be very relevant.
Also, I think if you read the fine print, I think it was something like it would be used to pay off the debts of the campaign as well. And we're not talking about future debts. We're talking about the debts they took on to finance the last election. So, I mean, so that's that, right? That's something to keep in mind about. But I've also read that he's renovating his Mar-a-Lago residence. I think getting ready to move back there. And Melania is looking for schools in the area for their son. I think they have a young son as well. So on the front face side, I think he's beginning to accept this and beginning.
I don't think it's a choice, right?
The embers of starting to move out. Who knows? I mean, yeah. But whoever said that President Trump abides by what makes sense? I don't think, you know, every time you think that, nah, he can't do that. Or no, he's got to do this. Or he should really file his tax returns, right?
Yeah.
He didn't do it. He didn't file his tax returns for 4 years. If it's a convention, he will break it. I think more often than not, that seems to be, I mean, talk about shattering different conventions. That's what he wants to do. But anyway, long story short here, right? What's it going to look like going forward? Because we've spent the last 4 years, a lot of time in the last 4 years, talking about this man, really, because of how powerful the seat is in the White House, right?
Leader of the free world, they say.
Leader of the free world, but if the US sneezes, the world catches the flu and China gets a bit worried about what's about to happen next. That's the state of the way things are. And yes, I'm sure he's going to make noise. And yes, he may run for 2024. But I think once he stops becoming news, as in like policy doesn't revolve around him, a tweet doesn't become a policy action or someone getting fired, at least someone in government getting fired, I think he'll become less important and finally will start to get away from. Yes, I'm very sure the fringe networks and the, let's just say the more conservative leaning, the super conservative leaning ones will still cover him and he will become like a expert commentator, right? Because they'll have access to him. And whenever Biden does something, they'll ask him to come on the show to talk about it. But I'm really hoping that he becomes less important from a policy-wise decision and that hopefully this leads to the Republican Party to move away from him instead of going back to him in 2024. We'll have to see. But Shanning, what do you think?
I actually disagree with you because I think Donald Trump is best in opposition because he is totally free to say and do whatever he wants. And he's very, whatever you say about the man, he is very clever in using social media and even network television to get his message across. So he, of course, has an agenda. And I'm sure he's very sore about having lost the US presidential elections. So he's going to attack Joe Biden and the Democratic Party at every possible, every little mistake they make, every misstep. It doesn't even have to be a mistake. It could just be a misstep. And you're going to be sure Mr. Donald Trump is going to be there. Of course, there's also speculation that because he wasn't very happy with the way media portrayed him at this elections, even including his favorite Fox News, right? Fox Network. Apparently, one of his plans post-elections is to consider setting up a media empire. And I think this media empire, you might as well just call it Trump TV or Trump Network, right? And it's just all going to be about him and his fellow family, okay? And I think there's enough of them to, you know, like that Kardashian, but politics. So I think...
Oh my God, I think
it's never
going to
go
point.
Away.
Oh, no. No. Anyway, yeah, I mean, the Trump media thing has been something that's been circulating around. People are speculating what's going to do next. It will be interesting to see, because you've got very extreme networks, also like OAN and Newsmax, which are already making Fox News look more moderate than conservative.
I never thought the word Fox equals moderate, but yeah.
Yeah, but if Chris Wallace continues to be, I think, the front face of Fox, we may have a bit more moderation there, but who knows? Really, I just hope that we start talking about him less, because we have to, because of the way news goes next year. Really, I think that's my Christmas wish and New Year's wish.
Well, we'll see. It's early days yet. Unfortunately, if anything, maybe we might even have more polarizing views out there. But let us know what you think. WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Do you think President Donald Trump is really going to go away, or are we going to see more of him in the next 4 years? Up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is Ain't No Sunshine by Bill Withers. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. This is Shaoning and I'm here with Roshan on The Morning Run. And that was The Royals by Lord. It has just gone past 6:39 in the morning. It's Tuesday, the 8th of December. And we've, of course, had some interesting conversations so far with regards to how are you celebrating the year-end holidays or Christmas, and what have you got to be grateful for, and also the one and only Mr. Donald Trump, a.k.a. Mr. Orange. But now we are taking a look at what's happening around the world. What do we have, Roshan, first up?
Well, first up, we're taking a look at Japan. And Yoshihide Suga is set to unveil his first stimulus package as Japan's prime minister today, amid an increase in the virus virus cases and a drop in support for his cabinet. Now, according to Bloomberg, the measures contained in the package amount to around $707 billion or thereabouts, including around $380 billion in fiscal measures such as loans, investments, and direct expenditure. The spending will be partly financed by $185 billion from a third extra budget.
Well, that's a lot of money that they're spending. And I think what's really sad for Japan is that, you know, they've basically suffered an economic slowdown for the last, I would say, last three decades, since the 1980s. Periods of boom, I think, when Abe came to power and there was the start of Abenomics, things were looking good. And even before COVID-19, things were also beginning to improve for Japan, especially, I think, there was a lot of optimism in terms of the Tokyo Olympics. But of course, that has been delayed till next year. Nonetheless, revised growth figures are expected to be released later today, and also going to confirm that Japan's, fortunately, I think they are going to see a surge in their third quarter numbers, fastest pace in 50 years. But I think all this is really down to a very low base effect. But record infection numbers in recent weeks are likely to cool the consumer spending that has helped drive the recovery in summer. Now, a popular travel subsidy program that Prime Minister Suga has defended as one of his most effective stimulus policies has come under fire for potentially worsening the spread of the virus. So Bloomberg reports that the government nevertheless intends to extend the go-to travel program throughout June, while adapting it in a flexible and appropriate way. And the latest draft shows an additional budgeted spending of $13 billion on the travel program.
Just opening the checkbook and letting the money fly, really, just making it rain out there in Japan. The latest measures are smaller in scale than the funding seen in the two extra budgets so far this year. Those budgets added $560 billion of additional spending, equivalent to around 11% of their economy. So just take that into account. And overall, the measures unveiled by Suga's predecessor, Shinzo Abe, came to $2.2 trillion after including loans, investments, and private sector initiatives. Now, of course, again, to reiterate, this is the one that Suga announced is the third extra budget that they had, right? So that's why it's also important, and that's why it's so big. I mean, it's not $2 trillion, but it's still a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, this is an economy really faced with some structural issues. One, of course, is the population is fast aging and they can't seem to resolve this issue. I think they've tried many, many years to overcome the twin problems of aging population and deflation. But it's really the case of what, you know, the economic term, Japanification of an economy, right? So no matter what you throw at its people, there just isn't this consumer confidence to run out and spend. And that's an unfortunate thing for them. But let's have this conversation closer to home, because Reuters has reported that the World Economic Forum's annual gathering will move from Switzerland to Singapore next year, as organizers said that the COVID-19 pandemic would make it challenging to host the event safely in Europe. Now, it is only the second time that this event will be hosted outside Switzerland since its inception in 1971 and marks its debut in Asia.
Yes, so this is quite a big deal, actually. I mean, only second time outside Switzerland. So the World Economic Forum will convene its special annual meeting in 2021 in Singapore from the 13th to 16th of May, and then will return to Davos in Switzerland in 2022. Organizers have already decided in October to shift the annual meeting to Birkenstock in central Switzerland before the location was once again shifted to Singapore, reportedly on the back of how Singapore has managed to keep the virus cases under control, especially when you compare it to the case numbers in Europe, right, or anywhere in that region. Now, Singapore has said its planned virus safety measures for the event could include on-arrival tests, pre-event and periodic antigen testing, as well as contact tracing of attendees. And this would be an interesting litmus test for just general event traveling, right? Like, if we had APEC this year, we couldn't
MICE,
do it.
MICE, which is dead, you know.
MICE is a really, I think, sad
state of
affairs.
And we're not referring to the small furry animals.
No harm was done to Mickey Mouse and Co. But we are talking about the conventions and the work-related meetings that always happen. So this could be an interesting litmus test for that industry.
Well, a little bit of a pat back on Malaysia too, because the WETS Summit announced that it will revive RISE, one of Asia's largest tech conference, in March 2022, moving it to Kuala Lumpur after 5 years in Hong Kong. So it's not only Singapore that's going to see some big conventions, Malaysia is too. But in the meantime, let's give us your thoughts on what we just talked about. Do you think Malaysia should grow its conventions business? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. I'm Wong Shaoning with Roshan Karnison, and this is The Morning Run. And that was the Uber Cool and The Beat Goes On by The Whispers. It is currently 6:49 in the morning, and we are taking a look at some of the local stories this morning. What's in front of you, Roshan?
Well, I've got some of the portals in front of me. Let's start with the stories around the Menteri Besar post in Perak there.
So it and the saga keeps going on and on and on.
Well played, Wong Shaoning. Well played. Oh, man. I can't believe I didn't do that first, but sure. Oh, my God. So the saga keeps going on and on, yes, as you've noted. And this follows the fact that there was no confidence vote on Friday. And now UMNO Supreme Council picks Sarani Mohammed to be the next. He's their party's choice, right? He's not confirmed just yet. I think Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi is going for a second meeting with the Sultan, Sultan Nazrin in Perak. So, but it's likely, and this is something we've heard as well, that Sarani is the front runner to take up that chief minister post. So that's one of the stories that is circulating around. But also, I'm noticing a few headlines here that opposition related headlines where they seem to be latching onto the Fitch downgrade as a chorus to call for a no confidence vote again. So I think they're hoping that there's some political maneuvering that can be done here to maybe ramp up the whether a no confidence vote takes the floor on goes to the parliament floor. We'll have to wait and see if anything goes there. And of course, I think the big news yesterday also was that Tunku Adnan's case was he got a DNAA, which is a discharge not amounting to an acquittal for his one of his corruption charges yesterday. So, but MSCC has said that there are new developments in the Graf case. So again, more to keep watch of. Nothing really definitive in the papers, or at least what I'm looking at right now. But a lot of interesting stories to keep in mind.
Yeah, following up on what you just said, Roshan, this is on page 6 of the New Straits Times. And the MACC stressed that the decision by the High Court yesterday did not mean that the former Federal Territories Minister would be left off the hook, and that the Putrajaya Member of Parliament could still be charged any time after receiving approval from the AG. And MACC also reminded everyone that there is another case against Dato' Sri Tunku Adnan, which is still waiting for a decision and is not related to yesterday's court verdict. But staying on the New Straits Times, page 7, I don't know whether you've realised, I think over the weekend there were all these pictures of a brawl, a fight at Lau Yat Plaza, which I have to say was quite disturbing because, you know, Lau Yat Plaza is in the center of town, Bukit Bintang Center. You would assume that it's pretty safe to do your shopping there, especially for your IT wear, IT stuff. But yesterday, six were fined over this Lau Yat Plaza brawl, and the accused claimed the reason was stress due to the lack of customers during the CMCO. So that apparently sparked a fight. But I don't know. I mean, is being stressed the justification to having a brawl with other members of the public? And I guess I saw videos of it, and I would say kudos to the security guards who were trying desperately to stop the factions from attacking each other. But it is disturbing to think that such things do happen in the center of KL. And it's not the first time I think Lau Yat Plaza has seen this though.
Yeah, definitely not the... not again, I think this also highlights the... just the... this is just one of the stories for how people are... how the situation on the ground is, right? Because, again, not condoning what happened, but it is... these are the kind of stresses that people go through when you can't make your sales, when you feel that...
But it's never right to go and bash somebody out just because it is.
I'm not saying that, right? I'm not at all condoning or anything like that. But that if you... these are... people are people, right? And behave in... there are always emotional stresses that sometimes... we're not always rational. I think that's the thing. It seems when we talk about and speaking about the industries and business and things like that, I've got an interesting story on the Malaysian Insight here where it looks like Sabah has issued guidelines and SOPs for the tourism and hospitality sector during the CMCO period, effective today until December 20th, effective yesterday until December 20th anyway. So this could be an interesting, again, litmus test as we enter December and see how they do their SOPs and their protocols and whether the rest of the region can adopt something like that. Because right now, I don't think the government has made an official statement about whether tourism in the peninsula is allowed, even though inter-district is allowed at this point, where they haven't really given any guidelines in terms of tourism itself, right?
Yeah.
So that's something to pay attention to. And let's just see how this rolls out in Sabah, because Sabah was one of those hard-hit virus places where we had a lot of virus cases.
Yeah, and I think we're going to continue that conversation at 7:15 with Yap Lip Sing, Chief Executive Officer of the Malaysian Association of Hotels. We're going to ask him what the new normal is going to be like for them with the relaxation of some of these travel, interstate travel. But coming up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, to find out where global markets are heading. But first, here's Psychedelic Shack by The Temptations. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.